You ever known someone
who's just happy
all the time? Cheerful
all the time. Doesn't matter what's going on in life, they are in a good mood. I think we all know someone like this. Maybe we work with this person. It doesn't matter what's going on at work. It could be the worst day, the busiest day. Bosses give you the worst projects to work on, but they're still in a good mood. Or maybe they're one of those people that are both morning and night people. You know those people? Like they wake up in the morning. It's like they've been awake for hours. You know those people? It's almost like these people like annoy us, and we want to just be like, are you a real person? Do you really exist? When I read the book of Philippians, it can seem like Paul is one of these cheerful people. Person who never really gets upset or angry. Right, before we jump into the book, let's look at some context from the book of Philippians and sort of see what is happening in Paul's life as he writes the book of Philippians. Philippians chapter 1, starting in verse 12. Philippians chapter 1, starting in verse 12, he says, "Now I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, so that my imprisonment in the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the whole Praetorian Guard and everyone else." From these verses, we see that when Paul writes this book, this letter to the Philippian church, he's in prison. And I'll tell you, that would not be my ideal situation, because I don't ever want to be in prison. And I imagine that's true for most anyone across the history of time. People do not want to be in prison. I mean, think about it. One of the things we tell kids, you know, obey your parents, obey authority, people in authority. Why? So you don't end up in prison. No one wants to be there. But Paul is there. But you notice reading through this letter to the Philippian church that Paul's attitude doesn't fit the attitude of someone who has been in prison. Instead, what we see is Paul is someone who is rejoicing. As a matter of fact, this idea behind rejoicing is sort of the key concept of the book. You know, whenever I made the slide, I was wondering if I should use this slide, because when I put slides of babies up, like, no one listens to me for the rest of the sermon. Try and pay attention. But yeah, this idea of rejoicing, it's a key concept in this book. As a matter of fact, sort of where I get the title of this lesson, "I Will Rejoice," can be found around verse 18. Chapter 1 and verse 18, he says, "What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in this I rejoice. Yes, I will rejoice." Upon the first reading of this book, some people might be puzzled as to how Paul can be rejoicing in his circumstances while he is in prison. Well, this is what we're going to talk about tonight. Hopefully, at the end of this lesson, we'll learn a little bit more about what it means to be joyous. But more importantly, we'll learn the reasons that Paul has to be joyful. And hopefully, through that, we'll learn the reasons that we also have to be joyful. Now, last week I went a little long. I think I went 35 minutes last week. I don't typically preach that long, so I plan on giving you that time back tonight. I don't plan on preaching for a very long time tonight. So let's go ahead and jump into the lesson. Why is Paul joyous in bad circumstances? Well, Paul can be joyous in bad circumstances because Jesus listens. Let's read verses 18 and 19 again. He says, "What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in this I rejoice. Yes, and I will rejoice, for I know that this will turn out for my deliverance through your prayers and the provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ." Here Paul says, through your prayers, and because Jesus listens, essentially, that's what he says, I will have deliverance. Now, this must be extremely comforting for Paul in his situation, because he's not in a good situation. He's in prison for doing what is right, for doing good. So it must be comforting for him to know that he serves a king who listens. And think about this with me. How many kings or prime ministers or presidents or rulers listen to the direct request of the people? When was the last time that you or I was able to walk into the Oval Office, stand in front of the desk, and request something of the president? That's not something we can do, right? I mean, sure, we can write letters to senators, to presidents, and maybe they'll respond, and it might not be them who responds, it might be an aide, but I can't just walk into the Oval Office, stand in front of the desk, and say, "Oh, Mr. Trump, I have a request." I can't do that. But notice, with our King, with our God, it's not like this. You know, we can't walk in front of the Oval Office and stand in front of the desk, but let me tell you what we can do. We can kneel before the throne and petition our God. See, there may be millions of people who pray to God, but he's never too busy because he listens. And not only this, notice with me that Jesus not only listens, he also understands what we're going through. It seems like whenever you think about political leaders these days, it seems like they can be a little detached from the people that they represent. You know, I think of more extreme examples like in North Korea with Kim Jong-un. I think about him and how, you know, he's very wealthy, he's very well off, but the people in North Korea, it is not that way. The people in North Korea are not wealthy. You see, he is detached from his people. He doesn't really understand what they are going through. He can't sympathize with them, but Jesus understands us. See, Jesus, he not only walked among us, but he suffered the things that we suffered, went through the trials that we go through, and was tempted just like us. And not only this, Jesus created us, right? He knows us better than we do. See, Jesus not only listens, but he understands his people. Some people wonder if God really listens. That's not something that we have to worry about. We have reason to rejoice because Jesus listens. And this is why Paul was able to rejoice. But that's not all. Moving on to the second point. Yes, Paul rejoiced. Paul was able to rejoice because Jesus listens. Paul was also able to rejoice because Jesus delivers. Now, this point is similar to the last one, but it's kind of distinct, so I wanted to emphasize this. So let's talk about it for a little while. Let's go back to what we read earlier and just reread verse 19. Paul says, "For I know that this will turn out for my deliverance through your prayers and the provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ." You see, this verse confirms something that we might wonder from time to time. This verse confirms that prayer does indeed work. Paul says, "Through your prayers, I'm going to be delivered." And Paul's situation might not have been good. It might have been negative, but he could rejoice because Jesus ultimately delivers. Now let me nuance that just a little bit. Whenever we talk about Jesus' deliverance or him delivering Paul, that doesn't necessarily mean that Paul's going to be released from prison. Think about that. The deliverance of Christ does not necessarily mean that Paul was going to be released from prison. Let's read verse 20, chapter 1 of Philippians. Verse 20. Actually, we could start in verse 19 and continue on. "For I know that this will turn out for my deliverance through your prayers and the provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, according to my earnest expectation and hope that I will not be put to shame in anything, but that with all boldness Christ will even now as always be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. See, Paul says, whether I live or whether I die, there's going to be deliverance. Ladies and gentlemen, that's something to be joyous about. We need to rejoice because Jesus will deliver us also. And let me say, just like Paul, there are going to be negative times in our lives. There are going to be hard times in our lives, times where we may struggle. Now, you guys may be tired of hearing me say that, because I say that a lot, but there's a reason. There are a lot of people who lose their faith because things don't go how they expect it to. And I suppose there's a reason for that. There are preachers who get up in the pulpit every Sunday and they'll say something like, well, God wants you to be happy. And if you follow him, nothing bad will happen to you. Ladies and gentlemen, that is not true. Paul went through hard times. We're going to go through hard times also. And during those times, we need to trust that the Lord will deliver us. And he will deliver us, whether it's on this side of life or it's on the other side of life. The example I like to point to is the example in Daniel regarding the three boys in Daniel chapter 3, where they refused to bow before the golden statue. You guys remember this story. Nebuchadnezzar says, bow before the statue or I'm going to throw you into the fire. And who can deliver you? And they say, well, king, our God's going to deliver us, right? But even if he doesn't, we're still going to be loyal to him. Why are they able to say something like that? Because they understand that whether it's in this life or it's in the next life, God will deliver. And let me ask you to think about what's more important. What's more important, being delivered from our physical trials here in this life or being delivered in the next life? Like, if you had the choice, if you had to choose between being delivered from every trial while here on earth or being delivered in the next life, which would you choose? I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, but I would go through every trial in this life to get deliverance in the next life. Would you? Oh, I didn't hear anybody. Let me say that one more time. I would go through every trial in this life to have deliverance in the next life. Would you? Good. See, Paul was able to rejoice because he understood that. He understood that Jesus delivers, and we can rejoice behind that also. But that's not the only reason why Paul was able to rejoice. There's another reason. Paul was able to rejoice because of Jesus' people. We're going to skip verse 20 here for just a second. But let's start reading from verse 21. Starting in verse 21, Paul says, for to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. But if I am to live on in the flesh, this will mean fruitful labor for me, and I do not know which to choose. But I am hard-pressed from both directions, having the desire to depart and be with Christ, for that is very much better. Yet to remain on in the flesh is more necessary for your sake. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy in the faith. We can see from these verses that Paul has a deep care, deep love for the people of God. And that's why he was able to rejoice. Because of God's people. He loved them. He cared for them. As a matter of fact, in these verses, Paul is setting up an argument that's meant to show these people how much he cared for them. And in verses 21 through 23, he starts off by saying, I don't know what to choose. I don't know if I'd rather be here or be with the Lord, because I'm getting pulled in both directions. But in verses 24 and 25, he comes to the decision because he thinks of the people of God. He says, you guys need me. For your sake, I will stay. See, Paul cared about the people of God, and that's why he was joyous. Like Paul, we also need to be joyous because of God's people. Like Paul, we need to have this self-sacrificing attitude, because that's what he had. I mean, think about what he was saying. He's saying, I'm willing to temporarily put off being with God for you, for the people of God. I'm willing to put your needs before my own. We need to have that same attitude. I think if we have this self-sacrificing attitude, it'll fix some of the problems in the kingdom. Problems where people leave a church because they think the grass is greener on the other side. Or issues where churches split over silly things. Maybe there's a really prominent family that's sort of upset with another really prominent family in the church because this prominent family didn't invite this prominent family to the Christmas party, and then everything just went downhill from there. You see, if we put one another first, we don't have to worry about that. We need to care for our brothers and sisters just like Paul did. And when we do this, we'll also be able to rejoice because of God's people, like Paul. There's one final point I want to share with you guys tonight. Paul, he was able to rejoice because Jesus listened. He's able to rejoice because Jesus delivers because of Jesus' people. But notice with me also that Paul is able to rejoice because Jesus is honored. Let's go back to verse 20. Paul says, it starts better if I start from verse 19. So let's start from verse 19. For I know that this will turn out for my deliverance through your prayers and the provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, according to my earnest expectation and hope, that I will not be put to shame in anything, but that with all boldness, Christ will even now, as always, be exalted in my body, whether in life or death. The English Standard Version or some versions say that Christ will be honored in my body. See, Paul is able to think past his negative circumstances and rejoice because ultimately Jesus is being honored. And I saved this point for last because I think this is one of the main reasons why Paul is able to rejoice. Paul understands that he's a servant of Christ. And if Christ is being honored through his work, then that is reason to rejoice. And you know, Paul was, like I said many, many times so far in the lesson, Paul was going through tough times. He's going through difficult times, but reading through the book of Philippians, we notice that he doesn't make it all about himself, does he? Whenever he's writing this letter, it's not, woe is me, look at my situation. That's not what it is. He, in writing this letter, he turns to God over and over again. We see it in verse 12. What does he say in verse 12? Now I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel. We see it in verse 18. He says, what then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in this I rejoice. You see, it's about God. Then in verse 27, he says, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or remain absent, I will hear that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. Paul doesn't focus on his circumstances. He's focusing on what's truly important, honoring Jesus through the work of the kingdom. And this also needs to be our main source of joy, because like Paul, we are servants of the king. We should rejoice when the king's work is being done, when he is being honored. And sometimes we may allow our circumstances to sort of overshadow the needs of the kingdom and distract us from what truly needs to be done. This is not how it should be. This is why Paul, at the end of the book, he talks about contentment. Whatever circumstances I'm going through, I'm content. Why is that? Well, because the Lord's work is being done. We need to be content also. You know, I fear that when we're not content, we're not satisfied with what we have in our circumstances, what we're truly saying is, well, God, you are not enough. Right? what you've given me is not enough, and what you will give me in the life to come is not enough. Ultimately, we're saying God is not enough. This isn't how it should be. We're going to go through the hard times, and the distractions will come. But if we understand what's truly important, if we understand that what's truly important is Jesus being honored through our work in the kingdom, then we'll have true joy, just like Paul. I don't know if Paul was the type of person who was always happy or always cheerful. Hopefully you guys have picked up the difference between being happy or cheerful and being joyous. There is a difference. Paul probably wasn't always happy, but he had reason to be joyous, because Jesus listens, Jesus delivers, because of Jesus' people, and because Jesus is being honored. Well, as citizens in the same kingdom as Paul, we also have those same reasons to be joyous. So let me just close by asking, or giving the invitation, are you a part of that kingdom? Maybe you want to be. If you want to be, that's great. If you want to be in the kingdom where we always have reason to be joyful, then that's great. You can do that tonight through baptism, through repentance, through living a loyal life to the King. You can do that. But maybe there's someone who has left the kingdom, but you want to come back. We extend the invitation to you also. If you want to come back to the Lord, if you want to start your work in the kingdom as a new child of God, you can do that. Whatever you need, you can come now as we stand and as we sing.